It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
For the right advice at the right time, call on the folks at Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
Hey, what are we talking about today?
Ben, we're going to talk a little bit about classic estate planning mistakes that we see pretty often.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, people think that they have things structured in a certain way, and then they don't actually go the way that they thought that they were going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, we don't, you know, come across these until the person's passed away.
Sure, sure.
So then that creates a whole conversation of complexity, really, with regard to how, you know, you address these things, and
mm-hmm.
in some cases there really is no way to address them. So, you know, my goodness, this type of situation presents itself in so many different ways. I mean, I would say that one area that probably is more common than others would be, you know, the beneficiary designation type
yeah.
thing. We've talked about that before. And of course, folks need to recognize that if you have a will that, for example, leaves everything to
mm-hmm.
my spouse and then if she's not living, to my kids or whomever it may be. But then we had our Fegley policy, or we had our, you know, retirement benefits, or we had our life insurance.
What was the first one you said? The Fegley
is federal group life insurance.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Just through usually Cherry Point in this area.
FEGLA.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think it's GLI.
GLI.
Yeah,
Fegley.
Not Fegla, Fegley.
In
yeah.
a minute okay. you said
didn't
that.
Ring quite right there.
That's
then.
Right.
Yeah, Fegley. But nevertheless, we have our will saying one thing, and then all of a sudden we have this old Fegley policy, for example, that we set up 30 mm-hmm. years ago and didn't think about it. And my goodness, it leaves $200,000 to
an ex
four wives ago or
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
So then we get into, you know, all those types of issues where the family knows that's not what was intended.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to deal with that. Now, we have many other permutations of that. You know, a case comes to mind where an elderly individual had decided that he was leaving his two pieces of real property, one to one family member, didn't have kids.
Right.
And then another to another family member.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, his wife had died, and they had agreed that that's what they were going to do years ago, and he had set this up in his will. It was a mm-hmm. done deal. That's the way it was. Well,
okay.
Now this, let me interrupt just
sure.
a second, Wes. I'm sorry,
yeah.
but this is kind of the introduction for this little story is doing things out of context.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Wes is going to describe is that then there was something, you know, just all of a sudden a decision was made and a certain thing was done. We're
mm-hmm.
going to put a little mystery out there for our listeners this morning,
okay.
about these facts. But I mean, you know, you have to be careful about doing something in an isolated way,
mm-hmm.
legally.
Yeah.
Because when you go to do this, he basically, Wes was going to say, had a deed done in a minute. I'm going to let Wes go back.
Mm-hmm.
But a deed done without looking at what the estate plan was. It was done in
uh-huh.
isolation. You've got like these joint account registrations, we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to look at things kind of with the totality of circumstances. Look at all of the facts when you
that
go to do
something.
That
estate plan needs to be the umbrella.
So let Wes continue.
Under.
This
okay.
is a great, a good story.
Right. So basically this elderly gentleman, he was having some health issues. He
mm-hmm.
had been in and out of the hospital and in and out of an assisted living facility. And as a side note, I would say a lot of times these last, you know, minute decisions happen when folks are starting to fail.
Right.
So maybe they're not all together mm-hmm. clear. Maybe they have the capacity to do them, but they're not all together clear as to the reason why they're doing them. So at any rate, he made the decision that his two pieces of property, one would go to one family member and one to the other family member. See, it was supposed to be that we were going to divide this among the family because
right.
one of the family members was on his wife's side of the family,
mm-hmm.
and then the other family member was on his side of the family.
Right.
So we're going to divide these two pieces of property that are basically of the same value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what he had when he died.
Mm-hmm.
He had a little bit of money, but really the bulk of his estate was these two pieces of property. So he had set it up years before in his will. where it just indicated just what I described
sure.
to you.
Yeah. A simple division.
Well, he decides, you know what? I think that we're going to swap that.
Ah.
We're going to leave this property to the other and this property to the other.
Okay.
And let me go talk to them about it and see if they're okay with it. And the family knew that that's what they were planning on doing previously. And they both were like, yes, that's fine. We don't have a problem with it. Whatever you want to do is fine. We'll accept that.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a deal that they reached. So he goes, frankly, to his lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And the lawyer prepared a deed.
Oh.
And the deed was to convey one of those two properties to the person he said to convey it to. Because
mm-hmm.
I assume what was said, I wasn't in this
right.
meeting with the lawyer.
Sure.
I assume what was said was, I've decided instead of leaving this property to this person, I'm going to leave the other one. So the lawyer's, I guess, knee-jerk reaction was, well, let's go ahead and just do a deed and they'll have the property. And are you okay with that? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So fine.
Or maybe what was said is the client, this is what I suspect, the gentleman went to his lawyer and said, I want to go ahead and deed yada, yada, yada.
Property A.
To Santa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To
mm-hmm.
Apple, to A. Let's go ahead. I want to go ahead and do that. Can you get that deed ready? Maybe even a phone call. And that's done. Just an isolated thing.
Mm-hmm.
You
I see where this is going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So whatever conversation took place, a deed got prepared. And then there was
only one.
That's right. And then there was conversation mm-hmm. with the family. Did you go ahead and take care? Oh, yeah. I went down to the lawyer. We took care of it. It's all taken care of. I feel so good about it. Everybody's mm-hmm. happy with it. Great. So no further conversation about it. Well, about 6 months goes by and the man passes away. Well, at that point in time, obviously he has this will from, mm-hmm. I think, 2012 or something like that. And then the deed that had conveyed the interest in the real property. So, Ben, I know you're already with me on what happened
yeah,
here. But
yeah.
what happened, obviously, was the effect of the deed was to go ahead and convey property A
mm-hmm.
to this one family member.
Mm-hmm.
But the will already left property A to this one family member, leaving property B.
Mm-hmm.
Or leaving this other family member with nothing. I'm sorry.
That's right.
Property A and B. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
A and B went to the one family member.
The one who was deeded to
That's
got
right.
both of them.
A and B went to the one family
yeah.
member. The other family member got nothing because yeah. one went by the will previously
well,
and the other went by the deed mm-hmm. Subsequently.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. The individual is deceased. Can't go back and change the documents. The deed is the deed and the will is the will. So what options do we have? Well, of course, the first option is to call the person who got the windfall
mm-hmm.
and say, look, you knew this was the way this was supposed to be. Let's go ahead and correct this with a quick claim deed. Make this right.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't.
And said, no,
right.
I'm not going to do that.
She decided.
Yeah, it's the other side of the family. It's not their
she
family.
She decided she was going to go ahead and take advantage of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I describe it. So,
but see, I mean, you know, clearly Ben, you know, as I kind of was putting an introduction to this little story, an isolated,
mm-hmm.
you know, without knowing the totality. I mean, if everything was right there, if the will was right in front of everyone, including the gentleman, the family, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and then a deed was done and both were reviewed at the same time and looked at, then this situation would not have developed. But clearly what happened here is that, some deed work was done,
mm-hmm.
if you will, without there being coordination with the last will and testament.
Well, if they'd done a second deed and deeded the other property, you know, just done the reverse,
right.
there would have been.
I think the idea, though, was for the one property to go to the one person
mm-hmm.
because the man did not want to continue to pay taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to go ahead and get that to her so she could pay the taxes on it.
Sure.
This was like a condo, okay,
mm-hmm.
not his home. So let's go ahead and do that. But I'm going to go ahead and hold the other property because I'm living there. I'll continue to pay taxes on it. But it passes under the will anyway, so we're okay.
Yeah.
Well, Cecil's exactly right. I mean, we reached out to the attorney who did the work.
Mm-hmm.
to see what his position was. And, you know, he was a little bit tight-lipped about it, as you would imagine. But I think that the response of the attorney would be, because, you know, you would think, was there some negligence here on behalf of the attorney? Should he have done something more? The response of the attorney would have been, and I think was, well, I was just asked to do a deed, and that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty clean response by the lawyer. However, I can tell you that, you know, when clients come into our office and they're asking for us to do a deed, or they're asking us to make changes as far as disposition of their property through documents that we do, we're always looking at the existing estate plan.
Yeah, especially if you
whenever,
did
it. Especially when, if we did it and he had done the previous, this lawyer had done the previous one.
Ben, there's just not a week that goes by without the telephone call, I want to deed my property.
Right, right.
You know, can I stop by? You know, the telephone call comes in at 10 o'clock in the morning. Can I stop by today at 3 o'clock and sign it?
Mm-hmm.
This phone call, which is a common thing, there is always more to the story than that. Mm-hmm. Always. And just, you just cannot do that kind of deed work in isolation to the totality of what might be happening in that family.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And, I realized that, you know, the client, the state bar would say that the client is the boss, and if the client instructs that a deed be done, then you as a lawyer are simply following the direction of your client, which is probably what this lawyer would say that did that deed. You know, that's what I was instructed to do.
Of course, yeah.
And that was what I was paid to do, $85 plus recording cost.
Mm-hmm.
But the state bar also, if you will, wants us to represent clients zealously, completely, competently, to the best of our abilities. And so, therefore, my opinion, I know Wes's opinion, is that, you know, we need to look beyond these simple requests and talk to the client. Well, why don't you, rather than expecting to come in and sign it at 3 o'clock, come on by at 3 o'clock, Mr. Jones or Mrs. Jones, and let's sit down and kind of talk about this. Yeah.
Absolutely. Where, as a lawyer, where you get in trouble with that is that if you just do exactly what your client asks you to do without asking any questions.
Mm-hmm.
Will you, Mr. Collins, will you go ahead and prepare a deed for that property you know I've got down on Smith Street to my my daughter? You know, Mr. Collins, will you go ahead and, you know, take this one person out of my will because she's doing something I'm not happy with? Well, I've got to pull out that file and look at the whole picture. I've got to look at the trust. I've got to look at, you know, whatever else there might be involved. Now, otherwise, there's a high likelihood that I make a mistake if we don't have some conversation about what we're trying to accomplish.
I would imagine that's tough when it's with an insistent client. That's a tough conversation to have.
We have, I know you're waving for a break, but we have a famous quote at our office. And I think actually Wes coined this quote from the get-go, which is that, look, we don't want to let a client's problem become our problem.
More to come in a moment. Well, back with Harvell and Collins, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, and talking about it here on Let's Talk Legal. And you presented us with a very interesting case. Now, are there any options coming out of this?
Well, option one, as we always talk about on this program, is, you know, try to work it out. Mm-hmm. You know, we even talk about that with the neighbor who's upsetting us, or the situation with the breach of contract or whatever it is. You try to work it out first if you can. In the event that you can't, then you look at what your options are in court. Obviously, you know, if you can't convince someone to do something to make things right, then you have to make them do it.
Right.
And we can't do that without the tool of the court in many cases. So obviously, as I indicated before, we contacted the person who got the windfall to see if they would make it right. Interestingly, the initial response was that, hey, I recognize it was a mistake. Let me think about it. I'll get back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 2 or 3 weeks, the response was, well, I've decided that I'm just not going to do anything about it and keep both properties. Well, that puts a little bit of a sour taste in your mouth about the whole situation, does it not?
Yeah.
So at any rate, in that case, we did file suit. And we're, and you know, obviously I'm not using any names, so on and so forth. The case isn't resolved yet.
But will the, cause you prefaced it with the conversations that had taken place. Will those witnesses, will they have a possible bearing on it or?
Absolutely. I mean, the file is filled with affidavits of those who knew what the situation was. This case eventually will take the deposition. We haven't done it yet of the lady who got the windfall. You know, we've got evidentiary issues there. There could be, issues with regard to what testimony comes in and what doesn't come in. But think about where we are with regard to the claim there. Now, this is not very clean. This is not like a breach of contract because what are we talking about? A breach of contract for an agreement to sell land or convey land. Well, that falls under the statute of frauds, has to be in writing. So really the type of claim you're talking about here falls under what's called unjust enrichment. And that's an equitable remedy, in very basic terms that allows the court to, you know, weigh the equities and make a determination based all the, based on all the facts and circumstances as to whether there could be some equitable tool used in the court to rectify this wrong, basically. The tool here would probably be like a constructive trust over the property that was conveyed. But I've got to tell you, the cases in North Carolina, really in all jurisdictions dealing with unjust enrichment, are all over the board. I mean, they're not very clean at all. You have some types of cases that fit, kind of fit the facts of this case, but maybe there's a little bit of a difference. You have other cases where the court indicated unjust enrichment wasn't allowed because of this variation. So there is not a case, and there hardly is in situations like this, a case that fits on all fours. You know, you just don't have that. But you have to be able to analyze it and apply the facts and the what the court has provided as far as precedent to it.
The lesson, though, that you're telling us is that the umbrella of the estate plan should be referred to at all every turn.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And we've said so many times on this program, you know, you must look at your beneficiary designations, your registration of your accounts, your quote joint with right of survivorship, payable on death designations that you make, and get the right hand and the left hand coordinated. Any deed work that you've done during your life, like this client. Just yesterday I had a client in my office and she was there with her two children and they pulled out deeds from Onslow County, and Duplin County. And well, this property went to this one and this other property went to the other one. And a lot of deed work had been done. Okay. Has already been done, but yet there's property still in her name. She's not absolutely sure on those deeds. They're all metes and bounds and confusing descriptions. And she thinks that that's the farm or part of the farm.
Right.
And this one over here, she thinks is the, you know, the property down by the riverfront. Okay. Well, you know, and yet now she's doing an estate plan. Now, fortunately, she's laying all that on the table to be deciphered and to be analyzed and looked at by our office. But that's a good thing. That's the kind of thing you need to do. She could have easily just told me, well, the following property I want to go so-and-so, you know, and that could be the very same property that she's already deeded away.
Right.
So you have to look at all of the circumstances, get as much documentation as you can from the client, and have the client go and verify their account registrations.
All right, we'll have more to come in just a moment here on Coastal Daybreak and Let's Talk Legal. Your calls are still welcome, 800-818-2255, or these local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
3 or 4 minutes left here, and Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, talking about the mistakes made with estates.
Ben, another just really kind of very simple one, but listeners will love this. You know, it's just tangible things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the diamond ring, the grandfather clock, you know, that's been in the family forever, things like this. We get the question, you know, old will will come in and, you know, in it will be, I hereby give my grandfather clock to my,
right.
to my granddaughter. I give my, you know, my engagement ring, my engagement diamond to, you know, certain person. Well, the standard of care right now that we lawyers practice is we really don't usually encumber the will with those kind of personal tangible property, bequests, because there is so many times people will go ahead and give this item to their child or grandchild while they're living.
Right. Right.
And it's not in their estate at the time. This creates a problem because the clerk of court requires that there be a receipt as to the fact that if there's a specific bequest like that of a grandfather clock to the granddaughter, then they want something signed by the granddaughter saying she got her grandfather clock.
Right. No matter when she got it, she didn't get her grandfather clock,
but it went to the other granddaughter.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's just not in the estate anymore, you see. So now we're into doing certain kinds of affidavits and time delay, et cetera. So, again, you see what I'm saying. I mean, the detail is important in a will. Another one, oh my gosh, I can't believe we forgot to mention that, is putting, I hereby give account number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, ABC to the following person. Well, it won't be that account with that account number when you die.
Yeah, the bank changed.
Yeah, the name of the bank changed.
Yeah,
the account number changed.
Yeah.
Okay. And maybe you even registered it joint with all three children, and yet your will says it's just going to one child. You begin to see enormous amount of coordination with the factual material that a good lawyer is going to need to review and decipher.
Well, just as we finish up here, again, the lesson here sounds very much like the other of the umbrella, that the will should be in broader strokes than that.
Yes.
Right. We don't. Right.
Yeah. A certain car. I hereby give, you know, my Honda Accord.
In other words,
we don't have a Honda Accord anymore 10 years later. We have, you know, a different kind of car.
Yeah, our intention was that whatever
car we happened to have was to go to this particular grandchild because they needed a car. So, you know, whatever automobile I happen to own at the time of my death should be the wording in that will, not a Honda Accord, because it may not be a Honda Accord.
You've mentioned also in the past that you could also do a you charge the executor with these things, and then a letter goes to the executor that may outline a lot of different things.
In many cases, you'll have a reference to a memo where the basically the testator, the person who did the will, can then outline what those personal property items are and who they go to.
More to come on next week on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And as always, give them a call, 726-9050, to make your appointment.